Hi, everyone. Welcome back. So glad to have you along for the ride this month. We are talking about what I consider knowledge, and it's very purposeful during this episode, especially because things outside, as I look outside my window right now, things are in bloom. And I really look at knowledge that way, that we are always learning, always growing, always evolving. And I feel like knowledge is power. It's so important for all of us to gather information and use that information to better ourselves, better what we know about others, better connect to other people. And I think that's what today's episode is all about. Really getting a better understanding of how to help survivors and to have a better understanding of some common themes that go on after someone is in a situation like sexual abuse or assault. And what goes on in the brain? How do people process this kind of trauma? And it's very difficult if you haven't experienced that to know what that's like or to know how to help or what to do. And so that's why we're here, to educate, to share information with you, to get a better understanding of how can I support the people in my life that have gone through this, that have experienced these things, and I don't know what to say or I don't know what to do. And hopefully today you can get some sort of understanding or some tips or just a general guideline for how to be there for the people in your life that have experienced these things. So I am very excited for today's show, as I am with every show, but we are really making sure to bring you incredible content that has a lot of information. And hopefully that information can further conversation and further support those in your life. So enjoy this episode, and I will see you later.
In order to support survivors, it is important to try and understand what responses they may be going through. Every survivor's healing journey timeline is different, but there are common threads that we can recognize. There are 5 stages to rape trauma syndrome, and we will briefly go over them here. If you're interested in learning more about rape trauma syndrome and supporting survivors through their healing journey, we have our next 40-hour training coming up in June, the 1st to the 5th. If these stages resonate with you and you need support, please call our support line at any time at 847-872-7799. The first stage in rape trauma syndrome is titled pre-assault discomfort, and this is typically described as a feeling from the survivor that just does not feel right. They can sense there has been a change in their date's demeanor, or they sense that someone may be following them. These feelings are often repressed at the time, and the survivor may recognize them in hindsight, which can often lead to victim blaming. We'll talk more about this in the next section, but this can sound like, I should have known better, or I shouldn't have gotten into the car with them. The second stage is the assault itself, where survivors can enter survival mode, which can, again, look very different. Responses are really based on the area of our brains that we can access during a time of stress, and these are the brainstem, the diencephalon, limbic, and cortex regions. If someone is in a state of terror, then their reaction will be more reflexive, what we typically call fight mode, and based in the brainstem. Fight can also include crying as a response. The brainstem is also where the reaction flight can occur when someone is simply reacting to the assault. Flight can be running from the assault, and it can also be feeling numbness in one's legs. The third response is freeze, where someone may become unresponsive. And lastly, fawn, which can look like complying with an attacker to save oneself. So, again, the 4 main responses to trauma are fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. All of these are trauma responses. which means that our bodies are instinctively and automatically going to one of these responses. They are our body's way of protecting ourselves. Whichever one a survivor goes to in a time of trauma is their body's way of taking care of them, and it is completely normal. On to the third stage of rape trauma syndrome. This is acute crisis reaction and can last typically a few days to a few weeks. Emotional reactions during this time can range anywhere from shock, disbelief, fear, humiliation, guilt, shame, embarrassment, self-blame, anger, and revenge. Survivors may process these feelings by being very controlled and appearing calm or subdued, and they can also express these emotions by becoming restless, tense, or through crying. They may have difficulty describing what happened to them and can feel disorganized. Survivors may struggle to cope with their everyday tasks. They may have difficulty making decisions or concentrating since the assault has disrupted their life. Some physical reactions they may experience can be soreness all over the body or injury to places where most force was used or where the assault occurred, such as soreness in throat, chest, arms, or legs and genital area, as well as irritation to their throat or mouth. And these physical symptoms, again, can vary depending on the assault. The next phase is a long-term process of reorganization and can also be called outward adjustment. During this phase, it is most common for survivors to want to forget that the assault ever happened. They may make lifestyle changes to gain control again, such as making a move, changing careers, or ending a relationship. The survivor, to family and friends, may appear as though they are back to normal. But this stage is really the survivor taking a step back from the trauma and the intensity of it. There are four factors that may influence a survivor's reorganization, which are the nature of the assault, the survivor's developmental stage, their social and support network, and their cultural background. The last stage we'll discuss in rape trauma syndrome is the underground phase, where survivors attempt to return to their lives as if nothing happened and may do things that block thoughts or just attempt to forget about it. This stage can also include difficulty concentrating and depression. Survivors can remain in the stage for years and may appear to be over it. A common theme of this stage for survivors may be avoidance. Remember that there is no timeline for survivors as they work through these stages. Understanding rape trauma syndrome provides us insight into how survivors may be responding or reacting to the trauma they have gone through. After learning more about rape trauma syndrome, we'll now turn to discussing how you can support a survivor in your life.
Hey everyone, my name is Dana and I'm the Education and Outreach Specialist here at the Z Center. Before the pandemic, I would be in most of the schools in Lake County doing prevention work, raising awareness about sexual violence. Now, most schools are remote or starting to go hybrid. Going from being in person all the time to being on Zoom the majority of the day has been quite the challenge. I have to remember how important it is to be taking care of myself and taking the breaks I need from screen time. Something I do for self-care is walk my neighborhood with my dogs and my son, or getting any sort of fresh air. Feeling the sun on my face while drinking my gallon of water is just therapy for me. This is your reminder to take care of yourself in whatever way fits. It could be reading a book, taking a bath, or joining a friend for a round of golf. Whatever the activity is, just make sure to set aside the time for it so you aren't getting burned out. And with that being said, I am heading outside for my mile.
Sexual assault and abuse is a topic that's challenging not only to talk about, but also to listen to and witness. You may be on the receiving end of a disclosure from someone you love and care about, or barely know. Understanding a bit about the ways in which survivors of sexual violence respond inwardly, outwardly, what's unique for them, and what are the common threads they share is important in order to really listen. We know sexual violence is about power and control, and that power can be asserted in homes, on our streets and in our schools, jails, at work, our places of worship. What that means is that sexual violence is local and global, affecting a number of groups in our community. Let's talk about some of those groups and communities in order to gain awareness and in turn provide compassion and support. One of the types of sexual violence is stranger rape. This is the least common form of sexual violence. Although this may occur anywhere between 10 to 15% of the time, these stories usually make the news, and they should. We should continue to talk with our children about stranger danger, safe people in their lives, and secret touches. Sexual assault and abuse is never the fault of the survivor, so their being in the wrong place at the wrong time seems as though survivors of stranger rape would experience less victim blaming. That's not always the case. Know the person in front of you is hearing, "Why were you out so late? Why did you walk home? Why didn't you run?" Remember, they'll be asked questions about the offender, like their name or what they look like, and they may not be able to answer those questions. So be patient. Give them time to process and respond. They may have already been blaming themselves. They're scared about STIs, and they don't know how to move forward. Help them with plans to feel safe and always validate their feelings. Acquaintance rape is another type of sexual violence that includes so many other groups within. This is the most common form of sexual assault and abuse. This really is an umbrella term to describe sexual violence where the survivor and the perpetrator know each other. Although they can, they don't need to know them well or have a relationship. So this can be a partner, but it can also be a teacher or a coach, clergy, a friend, that person in your apartment complex, the person who always bags your groceries, a neighbor, a doctor, a fellow student, or even the bus driver. Adults know their perpetrator approximately 85 to 90% of the time. Children, over 90% of the time. The biggest difference between a stranger and an acquaintance assault is trust. Some survivors don't see the assault as rape or abuse. With trust, red flags are blurred. When grooming is present, inappropriate behavior becomes normal. It's someone you know. They're my friend. They would never do something like that. Some survivors are in shock that someone they trusted would do this. The more trust there is, the more difficulty they can have. You'll hear them blame themselves and say things like, "I always wave at them. I must have sent the wrong message. I went to their apartment and had a drink with them. I always sit with them on the bus." Or, "That's just how Grandpa and I play." Remind them that it's never their fault. Help them to reframe their self-blame and remind them that their behavior is not an invitation for violence towards them. Remember, the person in front of you may really love and care about the perpetrator, and disclosing is going to be one of the hardest things that they ever do. A category of acquaintance rape is marital rape. This is a crime being carried out by the most intimate of acquaintances, your partner. Rape in a marriage was not considered a crime, and it wasn't until 1993 that marital rape became a crime in all 50 states. Like any other sexual violence, this is to reinforce power and dominance, even a tool of punishment. Many questions are still asked today. How can rape happen in a marriage? And one of the biggest questions, why do they stay? Please know when sitting with a survivor that marital rape has a higher level of physical violence, terror, and humiliation at its core. This is what's happening behind closed doors now. Ask yourself what the survivor's perceived fears might be if they came forward when the perpetrator has complete access to them. There are many reasons why someone may not report or leave. Please remember that they may love the perpetrator. There's been mental and emotional control. Be understanding of the family dynamics around religion and culture, honor and disgrace, immigration and language issues, and young children they're trying to keep safe. There's also self-blame here too, that it's their fault for their partner getting so angry. Know that their leaving right now may not be safe and may result in behavior by the perpetrator that could result in something more fatal. Be patient in interventions that support the survivor's ability to move forward towards ultimate safety. validate just how difficult this is and that you support their choices. Two of the most vulnerable groups of people are children and seniors, our elderly population. Our seniors may need help in and out of bed and bathtubs, wheelchairs, even the restroom. Acknowledging that rape is among the most underreported crimes, some of those reasons are fear and embarrassment. Our seniors are part of a generation that did not speak openly about sexuality and certainly not sexual assault. The rate of reporting among elderly is especially low because of that fear of reprisal, humiliation to speak up about it, and again, the perpetrator has private access to them. Because of this silence, there's no way of knowing the incidence of sexual violence among the elderly or shut-in individuals. The majority of seniors live alone, and some have family or caregivers where incidents happen in their own home. 75% of assaults occur in their own home, 50% during daylight hours. Some seniors can be over-medicated to decrease awareness, become an easier target for the perpetrator, and make details more difficult to talk about. For those living in a care facility, many are reluctant to report because they feel they'll be removed from the facility or they'll lose their care support that they depend on so much. Sexual violence can cause more injury and pain due to their age, so be aware of increased complaints. When sitting with a survivor, try to create a safe environment and acknowledge it's difficult to talk about such private things. Validate the feelings of helplessness they may have felt, but they have a right to be safe in their own home, and you're there to support them in any way possible. It's important to talk about the LGBTQ plus community and sexual violence. Power and control exists in all relationships. There's no difference in the sense of betrayal and pain, flashbacks, or the loss of trust they feel. There is, however, a different level of minimizing this crime and society's trivialization of the abuse in the LGBTQ community that's important to point out. In a survey of 500 people identifying themselves in the LGBTQ community, 52% reported at least one incident of sexual coercion by a partner. The CDC reports that this community of survivors reports equal or higher levels of acquaintance and intimate partner rape and stalking in their lifetime. For some survivors, it's not safe to come out and share who they are, so to report to the police might expose this personal and intimate piece of their lives they are not ready to disclose. This can keep them in an abusive relationship with very little support. This community can feel afraid their report won't be taken seriously, that the assault will be sexualized and not seen as a crime. More gay men are assaulted by heterosexual male strangers than a woman will be by a heterosexual female stranger. The concern they have for their safety and surroundings is very real. When sitting with a survivor, validate those feelings and support their plans for safety. Encourage them to seek support from the safe people in their lives. Acknowledge they may feel as though there may be less avenues for men in terms of reaching out for support. Remind them they're not alone and there are resources available for them. There are many more groups of people that are survivors. People with intellectual and physical disabilities, mental health conditions, the homeless, active military and veteran communities, those that are incarcerated, drug-facilitated assaults, and even survivors of natural disasters. Sexual violence can happen to any age, race, religion, or culture. All survivors respond differently to sexual violence and abuse, so we can't stereotype their actions or non-actions. They deserve to be believed and validated and treated without judgment. Regardless of which community a survivor identifies with, there can be some similarities. For example, substance abuse and eating disorders, homelessness, mental health conditions, and suicide. Survivors work through anxiety, self-esteem, gaps in the knowledge of what happened to them, or those lost memories being shared on social media for everyone to see. They deal with pregnancy, STIs, their reputation, body images, the list goes on. So what this means is that we still have a lot of work yet to do. Survivors hear all sorts of comments from their community and society that tear them down and shame them. This crime is not their fault. So be the voice that changes that narrative for them. Be the choices and support that counter what they might be hearing from friends and family. Saying you believe them then providing support is critical for their healing, and you may be the only person who tells them that.
Before we end today, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. Regardless of whether you are aware of it or not, taking the time to listen to this podcast is activism. Spreading the knowledge that you gained here today, that's activism. Bringing these topics up with friends and family, regardless of whether or not they share your point of view or not, is also activism. With all of the social justice issues needing our attention and our rallying right now, the desire to create change can definitely be empowering, but it can also lead to a state of overwhelm and, for some, even burnout. I hope each one of you feels supported in whatever activism you engage in, even if it is listening to this podcast to further educate yourselves about these topics that we bring up every single month. Another way that you can activate around these issues is ensuring that our podcast continues on with a recurring financial gift to Z Center. Becoming a survivor superhero allows us to do the work we do to end sexual violence. Thank you all again for your support. I want you to all take good care of each other, and I look forward to continued social justice activism next month.